Star Wars or Doctor Who? Star Wars or Doctor Who? Star Wars or Doctor Who?
His name is Rob.
His name is Rob.
He knows his Wookiees from his Daleks. Listen now.
Listen now.
Hear the Force challenge the TARDIS. Get your blue milk and jelly babies while we see which drives you crazy. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Who Wars. This is the podcast for those among us who just can't decide between Star Wars and Doctor Who. This is episode 19, and I'm your host, Rob Irwin. And if you think I'm sounding a bit strange, you'd be quite right. I'm ill. I've been sick with a cold all week, and it's taken some miracles of science and some hot tea and all manner of things to get my voice up to this level to do the intro and the outro and a few bridging pieces throughout the episode. On the whole, though, you're going to be hearing a lot more from the Who Wars team than myself here, because A, I can barely speak, and B, you probably don't want to hear a scratchy old voice like this anyway. But I will say a few things here in the intro. The first is a reminder of our show dates over the next couple of months. We missed last weekend, quite by design. We're going into a fortnightly schedule at present, so you won't hear from us again next Sunday, but you will hear from us then. I think it's something like the 28th of December, which is great because it falls just after the Doctor Who Christmas special, and we can talk about that then. And then in January as well, we'll only have a couple of dates, I think the 11th and the 25th of January, because it's just that time of year where people are travelling, people are doing a lot of other things, and I think a fortnightly schedule works. We may even continue it on into the rest of the year, who knows, but we'll see what happens when we get there. All right, something else to mention is we have a new website. In the past, if you've gone to whowars.net, it's pointed straight through to our entry, our listing, whatever you might call it, at Podbean. Podbean is where we host the podcast. And it was a basic, rudimentary kind of website which had all the episodes there, and you could click on a player and listen to them through your browser, whatever you like. But something I've wanted to do for a long time is have an actual website, more of a blog-type website where we can also put up text articles as well. And that's what I've been building over the last day or two. We now have a website at whowars.net if you go there, and it has entries for the first 18 podcasts. I'm really hoping this podcast will automatically upload to the website. I've got a little, I guess what would you call it, a little widget going on that will hopefully take the podcast as soon as it goes up onto our RSS feed and put it up on the blog as well. Again, fingers crossed. And yeah, it's very much a work in progress. I'm still not completely sold on the design I've got. I want to rework the Who Wars logo. If you go to the page about the team, it's just a place marker at the moment. It really is letting you in the doors before the building is, you know, finished completion. So apologies if you go there expecting to find something and it's not there yet. It will be there in the days and weeks ahead. And I'm really looking forward to it again, because I really want to have some text-based and maybe some image-based articles up in relation to Who Wars, as well as the podcast episodes. It's what a lot of podcasts do. It's a great thing, and we'll be doing it in the very near future, so stay tuned for that. We'll finish this introduction with something else that happened to me this week, and this was quite a strange thing. I had a dream, and that's not unusual. I dream most nights. It must be an overactive brain or imagination or something. And this was a Star Wars dream. And in the dream, I got to watch episode 7. And as I was watching it, I had this overarching thought. Oh, this is more like one of the prequels. Oh no. And I think it might come about because I'd been listening to one of our older podcasts where I was talking about what I wanted to see in the prequel trailer and wondering if the movie would look like the original movies. And then when I saw the trailer, I thought, oh, it actually looks like the prequels in some ways because of, you know, the modern CGI and so on. It can't avoid having that modern look. And I think that somehow trickled down into my brain for this dream. And I'm thinking, oh no, it's like the prequels. And how am I going to tell people about this? And will they believe me that I've seen it anyway? And oh, they're all going to be so disappointed. Oh no, oh no. And it was kind of panic-inducing, actually, to wake up, you know, thinking that I had this big revelation that I'd seen the film and that it was like the prequels and that it wasn't going to live up to people's expectation. Now, in reality, that's not what I think at all. I think this film has a great chance of redeeming the Star Wars name after the prequels. I mean, bits of the prequels were fine, you know. I don't want to slag them off as a blanket kind of thing, but I think people generally agreed that they weren't a patch on the original trilogy. And I think these new movies might not be up to the standard or our memories of the original trilogy, but I think they will be better. They'll probably sit somewhere between the prequels and the original trilogy for most of us. But this dream, yes, quite strange. Quite strange. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that bit of Star Wars fun. It was kind of inspired by the podcast as well, so there you go. Now, look, without any further ado, I'm going to take a break, try and freshen up this voice and get into my stories of the week. And then the team has so much good quality stuff to share with you. I just can't wait to start editing this episode together and getting it out there, because I think this is going to be quite a fun one. So stay tuned. Okay, and let's move on to my top stories of the week. I've given it a few hours, actually, since I recorded that introduction, so hopefully my voice is a little better. I think you can probably tell it's still not 100%, but I'm certainly a bit more comfortable here. So let's rip into this. I guess the biggest story this week was George Lucas saying that he hadn't seen the Star Wars trailer. And before I get into his actual comments and, you know, my take on all this, I want to go back in time, actually, to around October 2013. And George Lucas's son, Jet Lucas, was talking about Lucas giving up the franchise and how he was really torn on, you know, selling it, and it felt like a parent watching their child leave for college and, you know, comments like this. But Jet also spoke quite candidly about how his father had laid down some guidelines for Star Wars going forward, which is something you might expect from a creative consultant, which is kind of the way Lucas was being touted then. You know, oh, he's going to be a creative consultant on these movies. He's not the writer or director, but, you know, he's certainly there in the background. And there's a quote from Jet saying, you know, that just as obviously JJ was handpicked, Lucas is going to be there to guide whenever, and he'll help when he can. At the same time, though, he wants to let it go and, you know, become its own new generation. So a year ago, we had confirmation there that, you know, Lucas was letting go, but he was certainly involved in the process, a creative consultant, someone that JJ could call on. There's even a famous picture online. It's a black and white picture. It's quite nice, actually. It looks like JJ and George at lunch having a conversation. So they were certainly meeting. They were certainly chatting with each other. But then this past week, we had the story that when he was asked about the new Star Wars trailer, George said, "I don't know anything about it, I haven't seen it yet." And at first this seemed quite natural, because he followed it up by saying that, you know, he likes to see things in cinemas, and when the movie's out at the cinemas, he'll see it when it's released. That's okay. But he was also asked about J.J. Abrams' vision for the film, and if he was curious about it, and he said, "Not really." Now, this really cut to the bone a lot of Star Wars fans out there, and even myself to some degree, because when you think of that information from a year ago with Jet Lucas talking about his father and saying he's on board, he's a consultant, you know, he'll offer his help when needed, and then we have Lucas saying that, you know, he's not really interested in Abrams' vision for the movie, it makes me wonder, and this is my speculation now coming into things, whether the original treatment that Lucas put together is still being adhered to. You know, you wonder, you know, George has got these ideas and gives them to Disney and says, "Okay, I'll take your $4 billion or whatever he sold the company for, and here's my ideas for the new films, and, you know, I'll be on board and I'll consult to the new films, that's all good, but, you know, ultimately you make your own film." And then I've got to wonder whether, you know, J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan sat down and wrote something that might have thrown George's ideas out the windows to a large degree, or even to a degree that, you know, has perhaps annoyed him enough that he's no longer consulting. Because it would be weird if a consultant on the movie said he wasn't interested in the director's vision for the film. So it seems that George is sort of distancing himself more than a bit at the moment. I mean, sure, he says he'll go and see it at the cinema. That's great. But to say that he's not really interested, I do wonder whether something has happened behind the scenes and perhaps the film we're going to see as Episode 7 isn't quite what George envisioned, isn't quite the ideas that he'd sketched down. And for that reason, he's kind of making a little bit of a stand and hoping people read between the lines, perhaps people like myself, perhaps people like yourselves at home, because I see no other reason to say that I'm not really interested in JJ's vision for the film than to sort of throw a bit of a cat among the pigeons and, you know, just ruffle a few feathers, cause a few ripples, you know, and any other cliche you can think of. I think something is going on, and hopefully it'll come out one day. I love all these backstories to how films get made. I love reading the J.W. Rinzler books on Star Wars and Empire and Return of the Jedi, and learning about backroom deals and changes to things and, you know, personalities and clashes. And, you know, we might not hear about this straight away. We might not hear about it on the DVD commentary for Episode 7. But one day I hope the story comes out, because I think there might be a bit of a story here. But I think we're going to have to wait a little while before it becomes apparent. Moving on, there was a little story in Variety this past week about how there'll be an increasing Star Wars presence in Disney theme parks. But this presence is going to be based on the new films and what we see going forward, more so than the older stuff. Disney Chief Bob Iger has been saying that, you know, there are things like Star Tours and so on that, you know, take in the older films, but the new rides that they build and the new attractions they build will be based on the new films. And I guess that's cool, because the new films do have characters like Han Solo and ships like the Millennium Falcon, so even to us older fans, I think there'll still be some important touchstones there, even if we aren't as enamored with the new characters or the new vehicles in the films. So it's maybe not quite the shock it seems at first. But, yeah, it's certainly interesting and certainly noteworthy that when you go to a Disney theme park in the years ahead, the rides and attractions you see are going to be based on Episodes 7, 8, 9, you know, obviously the single movies that come out, whether they're Obi-Wan movies or Boba Fett movies or whatever they might be, they're all going to play a part in your experience, as it were, at Disneyland. So another little interesting story there. Which takes us on to another interesting story from Variety. I'm loving the Variety this week. And that's Mark Hamill talking about his beard in Star Wars The Force Awakens. There's a quote, "That is what I call my contractually obligated beard," he said. "I never got used to it, but face foliage is almost a part of the costume, and it does bring a gravitas, perhaps unearned, but nevertheless it makes a statement that they wanted to make, and I'm more than happy to oblige them." And you know what? This ties back to a bit of Mark Hamill audio from 1983 that I played in a recent podcast. I think it was just the previous podcast to this one, actually, where he spoke back in 1983 about how George Lucas wanted him to play the older Obi-Wan type figure around 2011. And here we are in 2014, and he's essentially done that. He's played an older, grizzled, you know, Obi-Wan type character with gravitas, and it's only a few years later than he thought it would be back in 83, so that's kind of cool. The article was also cool because, unlike George, I guess, George Lucas talking about how he hadn't seen the trailer, Mark Hamill was quite enthusiastic about having seen it, and he said the great thrill for him was watching the video of fans who were watching the trailer, and he says, "I forgot how happy this stuff makes a certain segment of our population. I mean, I was really moved to see these people that happy." And closing it out, a very telling quote, that while some fans were disappointed not to see Hamill and his original trilogy co-stars such as Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher in the teaser, Hamill wasn't surprised by their absence, and the quote here runs, "This is about the new generation of characters. I think that's the most important thing. It's the opening act of a whole new approach to the storytelling. When George said they wanted to do more, I rightly assumed they wouldn't be our story, because we had a beginning, a middle, and an end. This must be our offspring, and the current generation, with us there lending the kind of support that Peter Cushing and Alec Guinness did in the original." Now, has he let something drop there? "This must be our offspring, and the current generation." He is acknowledging there are offspring in this film. Now, are they offspring of Luke Skywalker? Are they offspring of Han and Leia, if Han and Leia got together in this universe. Of course, they did in the extended universe, but did they in this universe? Who knows? I think he's dropping something there, that there are offspring in this film. Even though we've got character names, and we'll talk about this more in a moment, of course, and they don't immediately suggest Skywalkers or Solos, I think this quote is dropping the fact that there are offspring in this film. That's very exciting. I think it's what people have assumed all along. I think it's what people have wanted all along. But I think that suggests that. And also, let's not forget that where he says that this is a kind of a support act, like Peter Cushing and Alec Guinness in the original Star Wars, does that suggest that Han, Luke, and Leia might only be in Episode 7? And they might not be in 8 or 9? Or do they just have a small role in this film and a small role in the next one and a small role in the third one? I don't know. I mean, we've heard reports from the set, and we've heard about, you know, Han and Chewie running around. I think it was a castle set that a spy report came from. So they're certainly in there having an adventure. But to what degree? I mean, we saw the Millennium Falcon flipping around in that trailer. Was Han at the controls? I don't know. You know, there's still a lot to learn about Episode 7. It's very, very exciting. And, you know, I guess this is a time to pause for thought for some of us who are wanting to see lots of Han, Luke, and Leia, into thinking that maybe they're not going to be front and center like we might assume or like we might hope. You know, we've got to tell the stories of these new characters, these offspring, and the current generation, as Mark Hamill says. Moving on, if you've been reading up on entertainment news, or not just entertainment news, actually, I think this has been fairly mainstream. Sony has been hacked, and tons of information, you know, whether it's what actors are being paid, whether it's personal messages between studio bigwigs, you know, all sorts of stuff is leaking out of Sony. And there are some sites like Gawker, which have been publishing some of these comments and some of this information. And I noticed one interesting thing in particular. I mean, you've probably heard the more common stories, like how much some of the guys in this new film about killing Kim Jong-un were paid, or how I think a story broke today about how Jennifer Lawrence and the other female actor in, that 70s movie, Hustle something or other, I don't know, she wasn't paid as much as some of the male actors in that film. And, you know, you've heard all those stories. You've heard Angelina Jolie being called childish or something or other in another of these bigwig emails. Well, that's all well and good, but I found a comment published by Gawker from David Fincher, who took a shot at Adam Driver. Now, Adam Driver is obviously in Star Wars The Force Awakens, and we believe he's playing the villain role. And David Fincher called it a horrible idea for Adam Driver to be in this role. Now, that's, you know, kind of damning, I think, and just part of this wider tapestry of all these internal emails and this information leaking out of Sony like a sieve at the moment. It's really something to behold. And of course, I think it just shows that people are human. While Hollywood types and movie industry types, you know, whenever they're on screen doing official interviews, they're always quite nice about everyone else. Of course, they're more like us, you know, regular people. And they do have their prejudices, and they do have their likes and their dislikes, and, you know, they will say that this actor sucks or that actor is stupid or whatever. And it's just kind of funny, but also affirming that these people do say it to each other, even if we're not privy to it most of the time. But yeah, Adam Driver, David Fincher is not a fan of you. Okay, now let's change gear for a moment. In our last podcast, we had thoughts on the Star Wars Episode 7 trailer, and each of the team had a shot at talking about that. Now, Kate did hers from on the road, and it was a bit short, and she was a bit tired, and what she's done here is sent me in some more audio, some more thoughts she's had on the trailer and beyond. So let me just hit play on the tape here and let Kate take you through some more thoughts on the Star Wars Episode 7 trailer.
There has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
I think it's safe to say that we've all felt it. These brief glimpses that we've got from the Force Awakens teaser have excited and inspired fans of all ages. From videos, to fan art, to pure speculation, Star Wars fever is at an all-time high once again. And isn't it fantastic? Now, you guys got my initial thoughts last week when I was on vacation. That was a less than ideal recording situation. I didn't have Wi-Fi and I just had my phone available. But now that I'm home and I've been able to watch the teaser on a screen bigger than my phone and watch it more than just a few times, I definitely have more to say about it. All right, so first of all, I just wanted to mention there was so much empty space in this trailer. I mean, it was an 88-second teaser, right? I counted at least 30 seconds of just blank space, right? So, and then also, you know, we had the Andy Serkis voiceover, but we didn't hear anything from any of the on-screen characters. And so I just went back and I watched the Phantom Menace tease, and it feels very sparse compared to that. That was just over 2 minutes. We heard dialogue from several of the main characters. So, you know, it really was just a tease, which is very JJ, isn't it? You know, speaking of JJ, I had a wild thought too. You know, since it did seem like a lot of the stuff that we saw in this teaser is what was already leaked, it got me thinking, what if JJ manufactured this teaser as a fake, based solely on, you know, the rumors and all this leaked information that's been out there, but it doesn't actually have anything to do with the movies? I know that that sounds like it's probably really far out there, and it's probably not true, but I wouldn't put anything past JJ. I mean, do the words, "it's not Khan," sound familiar to anyone? Well, anyway, so moving on to some more specifics about the teaser, I do have some more thoughts about that, so let me get into that. Okay, so I'll kind of go in chronological order of how the teaser went. First of all, John Boyega, how awesome is he, right? I love what he said to all the criticism about him being black and being in Star Wars. He just said, "get used to it." And that's right. People better get used to seeing John Boyega. In fact, he's actually, I didn't notice this before, but he is listed first in the cast list. I'm thinking he's probably got to be our main hero, right? So, John Boyega. That still makes me jump every time when he pops up, by the way. So, do we think he is actually a stormtrooper, or is it just a disguise? And, speaking of stormtroopers, which side are the stormtroopers on? Is it possible that maybe they're good guys, and that they're like peacekeepers for the Republic or something? You know, we did see the clones in the prequels go from being basically on the side of the good guys to the bad guys. Maybe it's something similar with the stormtroopers, I don't know. And then that also brings another point to mind. I've heard people saying, oh, he's a rebel in disguise, right? Well, that term rebel, if the New Republic is the main government, then they wouldn't be rebels anymore, right? I guess what it would be the New Empire or whatever would be technically be the rebels. But, you know, I guess we'll find out soon enough, right? So, then also, there was a probe droid, it sounded like, in the background of this short snippet. So, what is that probe droid looking for? And why doesn't he just shoot it down? We saw in The Empire Strikes Back how easily those things explode when you shoot them. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Okay, so, next up, roly-poly droid. I love the roly-poly droid. He's so cute. This was about the only one that I hadn't seen concept art of before or anything. Somehow I missed this one. But I went back and looked it up. It looks like, you know, the ball part is his motion mode or whatever. And that he unfolds like a Swiss Army knife to be more useful and to have little gadgets and stuff like that. So I'm not exactly sure how that works, but that will be a really cool reveal if that's what he does, you know. Now, if he's Kira's droid, he's most likely to have a pretty prominent role in this movie, right? But that makes me a little bit worried about R2-D2 and C-3PO's roles. I mean, R2-D2, he's my favorite in the Star Wars galaxy. So if I don't see him very much in this, it's going to make me really sad. Now also about roly-poly droid. Whoever thought that guy up is a genius, because it's marketing genius. Think of all the cool toys and beach balls and awesome marketing tie-ins that you can do with this little droid. It's going to be amazing, and I'll be first in line to get some of that merchandise. Okay, so Oscar Isaac. Oh, wait. First, let's go to Daisy Ridley. So, Daisy Ridley's character is rumored to be Han and Leia's daughter, but if she's from Tatooine, like it looks like she might be from this teaser, maybe she's Luke's daughter, because that would continue the Skywalkers living on Tatooine pattern nicely. And then I got to thinking, well, I wonder who her mother would be then. Well, I'm thinking Mara Jade. And I haven't seen any, as far as I could tell from the casting, no one that could really be Mara Jade. But what if Mara Jade is her mother and she died during childbirth? That could be an interesting twist, right? Now, what was that thing that she was riding on? I didn't like that thing. I thought it was pretty ugly. You know, even if it's in the desert and everything, I get that. But even like Luke's speeder was cooler than that thing. That thing is just clunky and ugh. Yeah. But anyway, so on to the next point, Oscar Isaac. Now, he seems to have some awesome piloting skills, right? Maybe he's Han and Leia's son. That would be pretty cool. And then, also, based on this teaser, I'm thinking that John, Daisy, and Oscar have got to be the new big three, if that's what they're focusing on and everything. So, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Now, the X-Wings and atmosphere, that was pretty cool. And, you know, with them not being in space, it kind of reminded me of that scene in Star Trek Into Darkness at the beginning when we see that the Enterprise is underwater. So, you know, it's just kind of out of its element, but it's still a really great scene that we love with our spaceships, our beloved spaceships. So, very JJ, and I think that's pretty cool. On to the last part of the trailer, the big bad villain guy. Who do I think that is? Well, I'm thinking Adam Driver, and here's why. So based on the casting list that is on the iTunes trailers thing, Adam Driver is actually listed third after John and Daisy, so I'm thinking he's probably our big bad villain. So other than that, I don't really have any hypothesis on who he is or where he comes from. Maybe he's in the Skywalker line, I'm not sure. But it'll be interesting to see. Now, about that crossguard lightsaber, I think it's pretty cool. But I'm wondering if maybe the little lightsaber crossguard thingies extend longer, maybe as long as the other one. So it'd be like a tri-lightsaber? I don't know. Would that be too similar to when Darth Maul's double saber extends in The Phantom Menace? I don't know. So, there you have it. That's pretty much my current thoughts about the Force Awakens teaser. Or was this the teaser? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. You know, it's part of the game. And it's just a little over a year longer till we get to see the actual movie. So I can't wait. So that's going to do it for me this time. Until we meet again, LLZ, and may the Force be with you.
All right. Thank you, Kate. Great thoughts as always. Thank you for sending in some of those. And of course, to people out there who are listening, you don't have to be a member of the Who Wars team to send in an MP3 like that. If you've got thoughts on the Star Wars trailer or the Star Wars character names, like we'll be discussing soon in the podcast, or anything else to do with Star Wars or Doctor Who, why don't you record yourself saying it and I'll throw it into the show, you know, as a news piece or a feature, whatever it suits. I really like to hear from people out there beyond our team. If you've got some thoughts, share them with us. Okay, moving on to the final story of the week, and I probably should throw in a Doctor Who story because we've been talking about so much Star Wars so far. And I want to read something from Big Chief Studios. Now, Big Chief Studios, I've mentioned on the show before, they put together a lot of great Doctor Who collectibles. They do these great 12-inch, well, I think they're about 12-inch, dolls with real clothing and beautifully sculpted faces. They also do other bits and pieces. They do a range of more cartoony, anime-style vinyl figures. I've got the 10th and 11th Doctors in those ranges. They're really cool. And recently they've been putting together their 12-inch Peter Capaldi 12th Doctor figure. And they've had to put out a little message now that this figure is coming up for sale. And the message runs, It is with regret that we have to inform all customers who would have been expecting a signed 12th Doctor figure that the signature edition will not be happening. Despite our best efforts to negotiate, we are unable to proceed as planned. We appreciate this will be frustrating news for many of our customers, but please do understand we cannot force an individual to participate if they do not wish to do so. Should the situation change in the future, we will of course keep you informed, and hopefully we might be able to proceed as originally intended. Thanks. From Big Chief Studios. Now, clearly they don't name Peter Capaldi here, but I would assume that the line, we cannot force an individual to participate when it comes to a signed figure, is Peter Capaldi himself signing some plaques to go with these signature editions. I think generally with Big Chief Studios, they do 100 or 250 or some lowish number like that of each 12-inch doll as it comes out, signed by the actor that the doll is representing. But here, Peter Capaldi's choosing not to. I've seen a lot of gnashing of teeth from fanboys and fangirls who, you know, are collecting these dolls and have collected all the signature editions so far. I mean, there's been a David Tennant and a Matt Smith, and I think there was an Amy Pond figure, obviously signed by Karen Gillan. There have even been Weeping Angel figures, and the signature edition was done by Stephen Moffat, Doctor Who's showrunner. So it is quite a big thing to collectors, and for there not to be a Peter Capaldi thing, I can understand on one hand why they're freaking out. But on the other, if I'm reading between the lines here, I guess Peter Capaldi might not be too impressed with, you know, perhaps signing something and his signature increasing its price, because these signature editions do sell at a premium above and beyond what the standard 12-inch doll would sell at. And hats off to him for that, because, I mean, it's clear that Peter Capaldi does a lot for fans. We see regularly him recording little videos for fans, or when he's at a shooting, fans come up in between takes and he'll sign things for them. He has written letters to fans who have written to him, and some of those have been scanned and put up online. And you can see that Peter Capaldi does care, and obviously, whether it's writing those letters or doing those videos or, you know, signing in between takes when he's recording Doctor Who, he's doing that for free. So I don't think Peter Capaldi has an issue with being paid or not for his signature. You know, he will do this stuff for free, and I think he would think of himself in the more traditional mold, the more traditional Doctors who, in the olden days, people did sign things for free. It was just what you did. You know, it was a pleasure and an honour to meet someone who was your fan and sign something for them. You know, that seems to have flipped around on its head in the more modern era, and celebrities think they might be doing you a favour if they sign something for you. And I'm thinking, you know, reading between the lines here, that Peter Capaldi might not be too impressed with his signature perhaps jacking up the price of the signature edition, and that might be why he's not signing it. I certainly can't think of any other reason to do it, because Peter Capaldi does like making fans happy, and signed editions of these dolls would make fans happy. So for him to take a stand and not do it, I think it must come down to price, and I don't think it's to do with him being paid a certain amount to do it, because he does this stuff for free. So that's my line of thought. That's how I'm thinking. I think Peter Capaldi might have an issue with his signature being used to jack up the price. Anyway, I won't labour the point. I think you know where my thoughts are with that. All right, with that done, that's my half a dozen stories for the week. Hope you enjoyed them. And now, without any further ado, let's kick on for a little feature from our newest member of the team, the Rev.
Hello, hello, Rev's up. I'm just hijacking the podcast for a moment with a non-requested assignment. But, well, the thing is, as I'm fairly new to the podcast, I feel like I've missed out on a few things. And one of the things I really enjoyed was when the other members of the team were asked which Star Wars character they would want to be or who they associated with the most. And I really wanted to join in with that because, well, I'm going to just throw my hat straight into the ring and say that I really love Obi-Wan, or Ben, as he was known for quite a long time. And it's specifically, well, it's the Ben from Star Wars A New Hope, really, that I really love. This old grizzled guy living amongst the sand dunes in this amazing little house, and he's got his little pipe that he's smoking there. You know, he's a guy who's seen it all, and he's no stranger to Mos Eisley Spaceport, let me say that. He's been in that bar a few times. You can see by the way he handles himself. He keeps his hand in. I think he's a marvellous character. And really do look up to him in that film. And a little bit disappointed with his depiction in episodes 1, 2 and 3 really. Because there is another Ben Kenobi history that I think suits the character a lot more. The one that I really love. And Star Wars comic issue 24, back from 78, I think, there's an amazing cover with Ben Kenobi in a purple robe, brandishing a red lightsaber. Hey, but these were simpler days, guys. In a strip in this comic called Silent Drifting, which was about his time as a Jedi Knight, and he's on a mission in it, and he's having a nice glass of booze in it. He's got lovely ladies surrounding him, and tough droids, and of course he's drawn in only that way that Star Wars comic used to draw the characters, all muscle bound and you know, proper fighting heroes. That's a Ben Kenobi who I like from the past. I've also seen some marvellous illustrations done based on the younger Alec Guinness, and I'm aware that a lot of people are unaware of Alec Guinness because of Star Wars, but he's truly what makes Obi-Wan an amazing character, because he's a fantastic actor. And he was in a lot of British films in the 50s that were about social comment and about what-ifs. And they were made by a film company called Ealing. And one of my particular favourite films is called The Man in the White Suit, if you want to check any of these out. And it's all about him. Alec Guinness is a mad scientist who invents an indestructible fabric. And the whole film's about, well, what if that actually happened? I mean, what would happen to all the companies that sell detergent and fabric softeners, and what about all the textile factories that make fabric? They wouldn't need to make it ever again. So it's a really good film. But he plays these amazing characters with such a range of emotion. Another one to look out for is Kind Hearts and Coronets, which he plays every single member of male and female of a particular family, which I know is a much done thing in films in modern times. I mean, Eddie Murphy's done it enough times. But of course, camera trickery is so much simpler these days. I mean, we could even do it ourselves with Photoshop, couldn't we, at home if we wanted to. But there are shots of multiple Alec Guinnesses that were done by, you know, filming pieces of glass and all sorts of bizarre techniques. These are really worth checking out, these films. And even up until his dying days, Alec Guinness, he did an amazing TV movie in the UK where he played a World War II veteran who'd saved his buddy in the field by headbutting a grenade, I believe, and getting some shrapnel embedded in his brain. And he played this amazing, wonderful, emotional character. That's the Obi-Wan that I really wish could have been in episodes 1, 2 and 3, but there you go. This is why I wish I was Ben Kenobi. Unfortunately, I'm a bit of a attention-seeking, bumbling buffoon who means well, but sometimes gets a bit messed up. So most of my friends are probably going to say I'm more like Jar Jar. Well, what I'd like to do now is just throw the floor open to another little question for the rest of the team. This time it's a Doctor Who one. When the series came back, I was really excited about the kind of things they could achieve. And I was thinking, I hope we get a dinosaur episode. And I hope we get a pirate episode. And I hope we get a Wild West episode, because they were great in the past, but I'd love to see them done now. And lo and behold, I got those. So I was very happy. And then when Time Heist came on, I suddenly thought, well, I never even imagined they could tap into that genre. So, what else could they do? And I thought, what else would I like them to do? Well, I'd love the Doctor to turn up in the middle of a proper, you know, Marvel-type superhero story where we've got an actual proper, you know, superhero at the centre of the story, and what the Doctor would do in those situations, or what he'd do in some kind of, you know, comic book adventure. And also, I love rock concerts and festivals, and it would be absolutely marvellous to see the Doctor appear in the middle of some shenanigans or something going on backstage at a rock concert at the centre of a band. I know Big Finish have achieved that very well a couple of times, but it'd be lovely to see it on telly. With a real or fictitious band, I don't mind. It could be good fun. Anyway, my question is to the rest of the team. What scenarios or genres would you like to see the Doctor pop up in a future episode? Thanks for letting me hog that bit of the podcast.
Okay, into some big Star Wars news of the week. We've already touched on this to some degree earlier in the show, and that's that we got the names of some of the new Star Wars characters, and they were presented in a very interesting way through classic-looking trading cards. And we got, you know, screenshots from the film, you know, put onto classic-looking trading cards and little captions below that gave us just a hint, just a taste of what might be happening or what the characters' names might be. And it was such a cool reveal. People say, oh, that's very JJ. I'm not sure JJ has actually done it before, so, you know, I guess they mean in the sense that JJ likes to do things in imaginative and inventive ways. And, yeah, that's looked really cool. And two of the team here, Rev and Kate, have decided to give some thoughts on these new character names and the big reveal of this week. So, look, without any further ado, let's take it away with the Rev.
What do I think about the names reveal and how it was done? I love it more than the trailer. I absolutely do. I think this is so good and it ticks all the right boxes for a fan of my age. When in the UK, when you're a little kid at the time of Empire and Star Wars, there was only three telly channels and you never used to get all the clips and the footage and the trailers and TV shows that gossiped and speculated about stuff. The only inkling you got of a film was when you saw photographs, and even more exciting when they got captions. But, you know, I remember you'd go in W.H. Smith's and you'd pick up the novelization with 8 pages of colour in the centre, and you'd flick through these novelizations and you'd see a picture of Cy Snootles, say, for Return of the Jedi, and, you know, you'd start thinking, oh, well, I wonder if she's going to be Luke Skywalker's best mate. You didn't know if they were going to be a major character or a minor character. You just didn't know anything. That was going to be fantastic. So I love how they've done it. I love the design of it. It seems to be more tactile, although it's a very clever use of modern technology. We've all received these things via the internet, but I can feel what kind of cardboard they're printed on. I know how they smell, the bubblegum smell, and you used to get the sort of that sort of dusting of icing sugar or something on the bubblegum so it didn't stick to the cards. It's so tactile. And the Star Wars text itself, it's not like a proper vector-based font like you get now where it's just, everything is identical but just miniaturized. It, you know, the gaps are slightly too big and the lines are slightly too wrong on it. It's good. It feels really real. Let me go through each of the cards. Ball Droid, who seems to be very popular already because he's got many Twitter accounts, is called BB-8. Or BB, I guess we're going to know him as O'Hare, because we haven't had a female droid yet, have we? It squeals merchandise at you, but I'm sure it's going to be fun, exciting merchandise. And I think BB could be one of those love-hate characters. It could be a Jar Jar, it could be an Ewok, I don't know. I love the Ewoks and Jar Jar, so I'm going to love BB as well. And then we've put Dameron in his X-Wing. Now, one of the things I like about this is, in the original trilogy, it was very clear who was a baddie and who was a goodie. But you've got this notion that Darth Vader had started off as a goodie and became bad. And then that's what we saw in the prequels. We knew exactly who was going to become the baddie, i.e. Anakin. But with this film, we don't know which paths these characters are going to go down. We don't know if they're going to start good and be turned, and by the end of this next cycle of films, they're going to be the bad guys, or if they're going to remain good, or if they're going to go through like a few different, are they going to be bad, then good, then turn again? We don't know. It's all so up in the air. I love it. Kylo Ren ignites his lightsaber. Interested about this, that he's not a Darth. And that seems to suggest, is he going to take up a Darth mantle within the new films? Is Kylo Ren going to become Darth something? Rey on her speeder, an interesting character, because there's speculation in so many different directions about her. She's got the classic look of the Padme Leia female bloodline of that particular family, so is she somehow linked there? Others are saying that she's an independent character who's trading in junk in a disused Atat Walker, I believe it. So we just don't know, do we? But, she's a girl with a bike. Well, what can you say? She's got my heart already. Finn on the Run. Again, this is a bit of a red herring of a character, I think, because He's wearing a Stormtrooper outfit, but is he in disguise like Han and Luke were in the first film? Is he on a mission? And, you know, we've heard there's a sort of Imperial probe droid buzzing in the background on the trailer, perhaps. So has he just been chased and hunted down? There's another photo that leads me to think a little bit like this, but Finn on the run. Again, we don't have Finn's surname, do we? So I wonder if it's going to just be something totally new that is it's just getting us thinking, or is it going to be a relative of a classic character? And again, I'm still going to stick with Finn on this one, because the next card is Stormtroopers Prepare for Battle. And Entertainment Weekly do get you thinking, isn't the guy in the middle a little short to be a Stormtrooper? And yeah, there's a little fella peeping over the shoulder of the other Stormtroopers who does seem to be a little bit shorter. Is this Finn in disguise? And that this scene actually comes before the escaping scene. X-Wings in formation. It's a beautiful shot, isn't it? At the moment, as far as iconic shots go, this is the one. It's nice to study it a bit closer and just look at how the updated X-Wings work with the wings and things and slightly more sleek. I did note on the trailer that these are, so it's exciting to see that. And then, of course, we've got the Millennium Falcon being shot at by the TIE fighters. I mean, again, it's another good iconic shot, isn't it? It does what it says on the tin. I love these cards. I love the retroness of them. I love the fact that hopefully it's out of the corporate branding, really. It's almost like something someone would create for a fan-made project or a fanzine. It's beautiful. It's ticking all the boxes in my little retro head. It focuses on the young characters, so it's nothing that's going to alienate new fans. I think they're fantastic things, and I just can't wait to see if they're going to carry this on further. Are we going to get retro comic covers and annuals? And I do know that there are some Star Wars figure edition covers coming out with the Marvel comics, so who knows? Really exciting times.
All right, thanks for that, Rev. It really is exciting times. And look, without any further ado, now for Kate's take on these new character names and the big reveal. And I'll be back after Kate with some of my thoughts.
Okay, so we've got names for some of our Force Awakens characters. How awesome is that? It just came right out of the blue. If you weren't paying attention to your Twitter feed on Thursday, you might have missed it. But I'm sure you've heard about it by now. The method with the retro cards is really cool. I like it a lot. It's very JJ, and I think when we look back on the marketing of this movie, we're all going to be very pleased with how it was done overall and just the little pieces and snippets that we got here and there. But yeah, very cool. So what do I think about the names? So I actually printed these out and I have them right here, and I'll go in order. And that's one thing I thought was interesting, the order of the cards. If it follows the pattern like the original Topps cards, it's kind of the order that the movie goes in. So I thought that was interesting because it's a little bit different than what we saw in the teaser. And so it basically goes BB, the droid, and then we've got Poe Dameron in his X-Wing. We've got Kylo, I'm not sure how you say that yet. Ren ignites his lightsaber. You've got Rey, or is it Rey? On her speeder. You've got Finn on the run. You've got Stormtroopers Prepare for Battle. X-Wings in Formation. And the Millennium Falcon. So, is that going to be the general plot of the movie? We'll have to wait and see. But also, it was kind of interesting how a lot of the numbers on these cards matched up with the ones from A New Hope. So that's very cool. Very JJ. I like that a lot. So what do I think of the individual names? Pretty good overall. I really like BB-8 for the droid. I think he's going to be called BB for short. Maybe B, but that might be a little too close to like Justin Bieber. So I don't know if they'll go that route. But yeah, I definitely think BB would be really cute. Poe Dameron, or is it? I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but I see nothing wrong with that. Kylo or Kylo Ren. Again, I think it sounds very Star Wars-y. Rey or Ree. I like it. I dig that. It's pretty short. Possibly could it be a nickname? Maybe. And Finn. Finn, I like it okay, but I just am a little bit surprised with that because it does seem a little bit more trendy. I know, you know, like Adventure Time, and I never really watched Glee, but I believe one of the characters on that was called Finn. But maybe that's what they're trying to go for, to tap into that younger demographic. So I guess that makes sense, and I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll be interesting to see if there are any twists to these names too. And it's interesting how we didn't get last names on a couple of them, so maybe those were clues for the movie or something. So we'll just have to wait and see. And I can't wait. So I'm really excited to find out more about The Force Awakens and to hear more character names and find out more about these characters. And also, I thought it was interesting, this reveal was on a Thursday. We got the title, The Force Awakens. That was on a Thursday too, kind of in this similar fashion. Just a nonchalant tweet, kind of like, oh yeah, this is the title. And then it just exploded, you know? So I thought that was interesting. They were both on Thursdays. And coming up on this Thursday, it's December 18th, which is 1 year out until Star Wars The Force Awakens is released in 2015. So might we perhaps be getting another surprise then? I don't know, but that would be really cool if we did. So keep your eyes on Twitter on this Thursday, just in case. So that's it for me. I will talk to you guys later.
All right, thanks, Kate, and obviously thanks to the rep who did his earlier as well. You know, as for me, some of this has already been touched upon, but when I saw these new names and the trading cards, some of the thoughts that popped into my head was that, you know, everyone's been thinking Oscar Isaac is Han and Leia's boy, but it seems he's not. He's Poe Dameron, you know? Then again, that name might be a false one. Could he be fighting under a pseudonym because he has famous parents, you know? You don't want to be in your parents' shadow all the time, so why not change your name if you're going to join the Rebel Alliance or whatever the equivalent is in this, you know, period during Star Wars Episode 7? They certainly have the Rebel Alliance logo on their uniforms, but whether that's been co-opted to be the New Republic logo or whatever, I'm not too sure. So his name is Poe Dameron, you know, we take that at face value, but is it a false name, you know? I mean, the use of an incorrect surname or name isn't unprecedented in Star Wars. I mean, Leia was Leia Organa for 2.5 films. It wasn't until, you know, halfway through Return of the Jedi that we learned that she was Leia Skywalker. So, you know, is there a reason why he's Poe Dameron? Could he still be related to Han and Leia, and this is meant to be throwing us off the scent? Or is he really just another character and he's not really related to Han and Leia at all? Who knows? Who knows? Now, with regard to Finn and Rey, neither of them have surnames yet, but could Rey be a Skywalker, for example, or a Solo? I guess I wonder why she'd be living out in the desert, as we're led to believe she's living in an old AT-AT that's broken down and fallen down in the desert. But putting that aside, you know, JJ said that the trading cards did tie into the old trading cards. And I think, as Kate might have touched on, that could relate to chronological order. You know, the pictures, and as we've seen them presented in these cards, are in the same order of the movies. Or could it relate to the numbers of these cards relating to the numbers of old trading cards? And certainly that one of Rey on her speeder relates to a picture of Luke Skywalker and his land speeder, if you go by the number on the card, in the old classic series of Star Wars trading cards. Now, J.J. Abrams has said that the numbers do play a part, so I wonder whether they're trying to tie Rey into Luke Skywalker. Is she an offspring of Luke Skywalker? Again, we go back to those Mark Hamill quotes. Apparently, there are offspring in this movie, but whether they're the offspring of the Skywalkers or the Solos or someone else, who knows? You know, the thoughts just popped into my head. Wedge Antilles. What if Poe Dameron is the son of Wedge Antilles? You know, he's obviously a hotshot X-Wing pilot. You know, could Wedge be his father, and he just doesn't use the Antilles surname because he doesn't want to be associated with Wedge? There's a wild and crazy thought. Who knows? But, Finn and Rey. Could Rey be a Skywalker? Could she be a Solo? I mean, Finn, who knows where Finn's come from? Could he be the son of Lando? You know, it's all just speculation at the moment. Now, I also noted Kylo Ren is described as igniting his lightsaber, so that character is male. I know we had spoken about in this podcast, and we'd heard in other podcasts and read on other websites people saying, could that actually be a female? Because I think the Kylo Ren character does have a mask, has a very slight kind of body. It might have been an interesting twist for that character to be female, but it does say his lightsaber. So Kylo Ren seems to be male. But, you know, who is Kylo Ren? People are saying, oh, we don't know who Adam Driver is yet, and we don't know who Gwendolyn Christie is yet, and we haven't seen all these other characters. Well, what if Kylo Ren is Adam Driver? I mean, people have said for a long time that Adam Driver is the baddie in this film. Kylo Ren looks like quite a baddie. Could that be Adam Driver under there? I guess so. It's all been a lot of fun to see these names, to see these reveals via the trading cards. It does make me wonder when we'll start to see maybe some more character names or some pictures of the original trilogy characters like Han, Luke and Leia, you know, on a trading card or in some other, you know, imaginative reveal from JJ and the team. It's just really, really exciting times to be a Star Wars fan. This is what being a Star Wars fan is all about, you know, conjecture, chatting. This is the fun time. This is the time before we know everything for sure. And our imaginations can go anywhere. It's really, really cool. Anyway, hope you enjoyed that segment. Let's move on with a couple of Doctor Who comic reviews from Kate and Lex.
Hey everybody, Kate here. It's time for my Titan Comics 10th Doctor issue number 5 review. This one, the title is called The Arts in Space Part 2, and it's written by Nick Abadzis with the artist Elena Casagrande, and the cover was done by Verity Glass, and I thought the cover is really cool. It's got this really awesome retro propaganda poster look, and it's got the Doctor and Gabby kind of pointing to the future, and it says create on it, so I really like the cover. So this one, it features the 10th Doctor, obviously, and Gabby Gonzalez. She is a would-be artist. I'm guessing she's like in her late teens to early 20s, and in the first 3 issues, she actually met the Doctor. They had an adventure over in New York City, and so she helped him defeat the aliens, and so as a thank you, he said that he would give her one trip in the TARDIS. So we've heard that before, haven't we? So this is her first trip in the TARDIS, and since she's artistic, the Doctor took her to meet one of his favorite artists. The villain in this is the Apprentice. It's this male-female shapeshifter that's able to kind of like split into different entities. And it gets murderously jealous when it thinks that somebody else is trying to replace them as an apprentice. And then we've got the artist that the Doctor was taking her to see. And the artist is named Jay Ikayuyu. So the artist is pretty cool. It can also shift from being male to female. And in Gabby's note, she describes it as a fierce-looking Indian goddess. So it's got like the multiple arms, multiple eyes kind of thing going on. So in the last issue, we're left with a cliffhanger where the Doctor's falling to his death in the Infinite Staircase, a la M.C. Escher. But then, so this issue starts with him falling, and then suddenly he's saved by this flying trapeze rope that appears out of nowhere. And meanwhile, Gabby stumbles upon the studio, and she convinces the girl apprentice to show her more of her work. And they have some girl time bonding, and Gabby has some interesting artistic revelations, I guess you could say. And she connects, and she's able to understand this interesting block transfer art method. So the other part of the apprentice, which is the boy one, I guess at this point, is actually chasing after the Doctor, and the Doctor eventually outsmarts the boy apprentice, and he discovers that the statue that they found of Jay actually is her, the artist. And we learn that she was the one who created the apprentices, and she gave them an AI persona, which backfired on her because it split into the two aspects of her, kind of like her self-doubt. And each was as powerful as her, and they were totally insane. And so what Jay did was she went into a voluntary stasis to try to drain the power so that they weren't as powerful. And she stays like that for about 100 years. So after Gabby had touched the apprentice, this residual energy caused these mouth butterfly things to start flying around her. And they were blurting out her subconscious. So that was pretty funny. You got to see what Gabby was actually thinking. And that had some very funny moments. So eventually, the doctor's able to communicate with Jay, and she comes out of her stasis, and she neutralizes the threat of the apprentices, and everything is good in the world, and Gabby and the doctor are about to leave, and then Jay offers Gabby an apprenticeship with her, which she declines because she's going to go with the doctor, who has offered her a more permanent arrangement. And so then the doctor asks her where she would like to go this time, and she says she would like to go to the past this time. So what did I think of this story? I really liked it. It was easy to follow, and it had really compelling artwork, both with the regular comic part and then Gabby's sketchbook, too. And so it also had really interesting characters. I really like Gabby as the companion. I feel like she's really relatable to me as an artistic person, because if I ever went traveling with the doctor, I would, of course, have like a notebook and a sketchbook handy so that I could be taking notes and sketches and all that kind of stuff. So I really like that aspect of this series of comics with Gabby's personal insights. And so it's really cool to see her character grow, and it'll be really interesting to see what she's capable of in future issues. And then that was also a really cool twist with the apprentice, that Jay actually had created the apprentice and it just kind of went bad. So I like that aspect of it. But overall, I thought this was a really fun, captivating read. And it's really cool to have such a visual medium like a comic book feature an artistic theme. And so I give this comic 9 out of 10 Sonic Screwdrivers. This one goes on sale December 17th, so I highly recommend that you go out and buy it. Whether you've been reading these Doctor Who comics all along, or even if you haven't, this would be a really great story arc to start with. But if that is the case, probably go back and start with issue number 4. So get issue number 4 and then this one issue number 5. And that would be a really good place for you to start. And so about that next issue, issue number 6, it's called Dark Angel. It says that the Doctor and Gabby arrive in the trenches of World War I. Trenches that are filled with weeping angels. So, it looks like we got a series of weeping angel stories coming up. So, that will be really fun to read that. So, I hope you enjoyed my first comic review. Be sure to stay tuned next month when I do the next one in the series. Until then, allons-y, and may the Force be with you.
So, this is my first comic review, and it is an honor. But, I guess, I should probably ask you to keep in mind that I don't have a comic-heavy background. I've read a few graphic novels, and manga, but never one of these before. So, yeah, that's my perspective, where I'm coming from. I'm going to start off by saying, though, that flat out, I liked it. I like this comic. I can definitely see a long future of reading this particular series. Not just The 11th Doctor, but I'm definitely going to branch out and start reading other comics. It's not just about the story also. I just really enjoy the artwork. So I loved this particular issue. And also, I, of course, to get the backstory, I read all the ones before it. And Alice is a kick-ass companion. She's really smart. At one point, the Doctor hands over a sonic screwdriver to, what's his name? Robert Johnson, Alice's mom's favorite musician. This is a couple issues ago. Because he's about to be possessed by something that has to do with the Stirview Inc. And that's still a mystery. And he's just given the order to give the sonic screwdriver to Alice as if she'll know what to do. And hey, you know what? She actually does know what to do. She pops the sonic screwdriver into the TARDIS and from there does something really cool, and it's musically oriented. All by herself, she just figures it out. So Alice is one of the coolest companions ever. She's super smart, she's brave, and she fights rough. In this issue, she goes right at the creature, doesn't even hesitate, looks like. She just goes at it to protect her and Jones. Don't worry, she's not horribly violent. I don't think she doesn't kill it. So that says something. But yeah, she really goes for it. And yeah, speaking of the creature, it's one of the craziest creatures I've ever seen on Doctor Who or a Doctor Who related world. It's got these floating hand and feet joints. He can melt into you, and by doing that, he steals all your information. And I guess he's able to return it also. I don't know if I should be telling you this. But yeah, really cool creature. I hope I didn't ruin stuff for you. It's all about the experience anyways, right? And yeah, I'm not really sure where the creature's eyes were. It was like, I don't know, it just completely different orientation to other creatures we've seen. Don't really know too much about this creature other than, you know, it's awesome. It even trails puddles behind it, like it melts. Not just, you know, it won't just melt the thing it's trying to absorb, but it also just kind of melts itself, I guess, and it leaves these huge puddles behind it, trailing wherever it goes. Kind of cute. It even has these lamb ears, kind of. They're these really long lamb ears. He's just this tremendously large, clunky, psychic creature. Kind of cute. Almost like a Pokemon. Well, maybe not. But it definitely is unique. And yeah, so the creature is kind of terrifying, but also kind of elegant. Really cool. And so here I am with my first review, and I'm reviewing sort of a closing story. A bunch of different storylines resolved in this issue, particular issue. Ironic that it's my first one that I get to talk about the closing of it all, or not all of it. Still a mystery as to who Serview Inc. is, but yeah, kind of funny that this was my first review. I have to say I enjoyed the other issues more because, you know, they were more funny. This one, there was a lot of running around and, trying not to get shot by ray guns, that sort of thing. You know, stuff that every conclusion has to have. So that's what this issue was kind of like. Not as funny, but still had some moments. We get some quirky doctor quips, and Jones says something about, you know, our minds are blown from the creature. Typical hippie. So there were more sort of serious scenes in this issue. I was surprised by the level of violence, though I suspect it's sort of a comic thing, but it was a little more violent than I expected, or at least it surprised me, I mean. But I guess they've got to put those whams and thwacks and kapows, you know, those sound effects in there somewhere, or else it wouldn't be a comic, right? What do I know? So, actually, it really wasn't that violent. Don't get alarmed. The Doctor is still the same guy. It's just that there was a bit of retaliation on the Doctor's part that was pushing the boundaries of what he is against. It was purely defensive, really. It certainly doesn't compare to what Agent Hart was about to do to him, and Alice and Jones. It was just still surprising to see the Doctor basically taser a whole crowd of people with his sonic screwdriver. Kind of violent. And that wasn't even his first time. He does it twice in this issue. So here in this comic world is something you don't see every day. In terms of what the Doctor does on his day-to-day life. It's a little different. But definitely worth checking out. Everything comes full circle in this issue. Well, almost everything. There is still that mystery of Serview Inc., and I am very much looking forward to reading the next comics. So I've read all of them twice now, and the more I look at these, the better it all gets. There's just so much to comics, I'm realizing. The artwork, the entire composition of it all, and they're very entertaining. So, yeah, check these comics out. And that's all I have to say, I think. Till next time, bye!
Howdy, folks. Kate here. Brace yourselves for another fan interview this week. This time, I sat down with my brother Joa, and we had some intriguing discussions about Doctor Who and Star Wars. And just a note, we did record this before we had the big title announcement about The Force Awakens, so keep that in mind. Enjoy the interview. Okay, so I'm here with my big brother Joa, who is a recent convert to Doctor Whoism. Because of me. And also, my 5-year-old nephew, Nicholas, is here, too. Say hi. Say hi, guys. To start it off, I thought I would start with the question, since this is a Doctor Who Star Wars podcast. Star Wars or Doctor Who? Which one do you like better?
I think I like Star Wars better, just because it's more characters, I guess, in the universe that you can...
Interesting.
You can relate to or like or dislike. I'm only about halfway through season 2 of the new Doctor Who shows. Yes. So I'm still kind of forming opinions. The jury's still kind of out. But it's a cool show. It's a cool sci-fi show to get into. And I'm just kind of at the mercy of BBC America in the order that they show things.
Right.
Hopefully they'll... keep doing repeats in addition to the new episodes, because I'm kind of a continuity guy. I don't want to just jump in. I want to watch it from the start. And then things like Torchwood, for example, would actually make sense to me.
Ah. So why don't you tell us what episodes you've seen? Like, what was the first episode of Doctor Who that you saw? And then what have you seen since then?
Well, I've been focusing on season 2. That's what's kind of on reruns right now. And okay. I think I actually started watching the second half of season 2 first.
Oh.
So I'm kind of was trying to piece together some of these relationships, like the doctor between him and Rose.
Right.
They seem to kind of flirt a lot with each other and they kind of giggle and skip around like they're in love. But I guess... nobody really knows for sure if they are.
Well, you need to watch the first season.
And I kind of watched... then I started watching the beginning of season 2.
Bye, Nicholas.
And Rose has a boyfriend, Mickey, who got left behind with Rose's mom. So maybe there's some gaps to fill in there. But
yeah.
If Rose has a boyfriend, she should forget about the doctor, I guess.
Okay. So, speaking of the Doctor, so you've also seen one episode from this last series with Peter Capaldi, the 12th Doctor, and you've seen David Tennant as the 10th Doctor. It sounded like you might have seen one episode with Matt Smith, too. So, what are your impressions of the different Doctors so far?
I think the season 2 Doctor is the one I've seen the most, and he's a little too... carefree, I guess. He's kind of seems to be pretty cavalier when he, especially at the beginnings of episodes, he'll just kind of waltz right out of his telephone box, and he could be having armed people waiting for him or anything, and he seems to not be too concerned, maybe even reckless.
Oh.
Maybe that's a good word.
That's very interesting. I think you would really like the 9th Doctor. You gotta watch that series.
That's season 1?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, did you remember anything from the episode that you watched with me, the one that was about...
Robin Hood?
Robin Hood, yes. Did you remember anything about that Doctor?
I think he seems, at least the actor's older, obviously.
Yeah.
And he kind of seems to portray that as the way the Doctor acts.
Right.
I guess that's not necessarily one and the same if you're a Time Lord. That you're... the age you look...
right.
...necessarily
exactly.
reflects how you act. But He kind of fits the role of being a little older and wiser and more mature. Maybe thinks things through a little bit more than the season two Doctor.
Excellent observations, brother. So, who are the different companions that you've seen so far, and who's your favorite of them?
Well, I think I like Rose. She's pretty cool. She seems to be just like a regular, you know, regular citizen that the Doctor just picked up.
Yeah. So, I like Rose is one of my favorites too.
And obviously I haven't seen her officially in any other acting role, you know, so
yeah.
I kind of like that when they can take just somebody you've never seen before or heard of before. And that kind of makes that their character then.
Yeah.
That's kind of what she's going to be known for.
Yeah, that's true.
Even if she does other shows or movies, you'll always kind of think of her as Rose when you see her.
Yeah.
Or maybe you'll get to see her at a Comic-Con or something.
That would be cool.
That would be cool.
Okay, so villains. Who's your favorite villain?
I was just going to ask you because I couldn't remember which season the Angels were from.
I think that was series 3. That was a good episode.
That was a really cool one. And I've noticed in my DVR queue, there's a few more coming up with the Weeping Angels. So they're pretty creepy just because they're so simplistic.
Yeah.
You know, they don't need to do CGI and Hollywood, you know, special effects. And it's creepy because there's statues everywhere.
Totally.
You kind of think about that in the back of your mind.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Whenever you turn your back on one. But that, I think it was Blink was the episode we watched at your house.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. I didn't see that coming, how he was going to trick them.
Yeah.
All four of them into looking at each other.
That was pretty good.
And freezing
Spoiler
them,
alert. So.
Spoiler.
5-year-old spoiler.
Yes. Okay, so I think we covered Doctor Who pretty good. So let's talk a little bit about Star Wars then. So obviously you and my other older brother had an influence on my liking Star Wars. I know you guys would always be playing Star Wars and stuff like that growing up. And you guys were actually alive when it came out. But our cousin Leah would always want to play Leia, right?
Mm-hmm.
We asked a question a while back. Not necessarily your favorite character, but who would you want to be in the Star Wars universe? So, who would you like to be?
Probably some type of bounty hunter.
Oh, interesting.
Whether you consider Han Solo a bounty hunter, I could be him. Or I could just kind of be a loner, you know.
Yeah.
Working for the Empire.
That's
and,
cool.
And collecting my credits and doing my own thing. I thought wasn't Disney coming, aren't they coming off with a spinoff of Boba Fett?
I don't know if that's been officially announced, but that there is a lot of speculation about that, and there are spinoffs coming out.
That would be a cool premise, you know?
Yeah.
It
would be really cool if Daniel Logan from the prequels, who played young Boba Fett, could reprise his role and play Boba Fett again. I know a lot of people would really enjoy that. So who's your favorite character then?
Going old school, it would have to be Jabba.
What?
Jabba the Hutt.
That is totally unexpected. Wow.
He's just so...
Please explain.
He's so funny, for one thing. And what they were able to do in the original without CGI and all the Hollywood voodoo that they do today, and you still got it. When you watch the original...
Wow.
It's this vile, disgusting
that he
worm
is.
Type of creature, but he still has that immense amount of power.
Yeah.
You know, he's basically, I guess he's kind of like a mob boss,
right?
As far as power and
totally
and being dirty and corrupt and not caring about what anybody else thinks, you know. So maybe they should make a Jabba spinoff.
That might be interesting. So, how excited are you on a scale of 1 to 10 about episode 7 coming out?
When is it coming out?
It's just a little over a year now. It'll be December 2015.
That's too long.
Yeah. Do you have any ideas what the title might be?
I'm pretty blank. I know there a lot of, I don't know if the rumors are confirmed, but obviously they're gonna be heavy on the Skywalker still.
Yeah.
The legacy of the Skywalkers.
Right.
And I heard that Mark Hamill will be in it.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sure that's been confirmed.
Oh yeah, the big three.
I'm not sure what's the timing on it. Like how
I believe it's supposed to be 30 years after Return of the Jedi.
Okay. So everybody should still be there.
Yeah.
Every character from 4 through 6.
Right. Except Billy Dee Williams has not been confirmed yet. Interesting, huh?
Very interesting. Because what about Jar Jar?
No, I don't think. I think if JJ is smart, he'll keep Jar Jar out of this. Or if he brings him in, it will be like a gruesome death.
Kill him off.
That might bring some fans back to the saga.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember too, because Vader got resurrected, so to speak, from those lava pits.
Right.
And the Emperor was... Oh, wait. Is he alive or dead?
Well, Vader basically...
He threw him over the edge and he kind of...
You're led to believe that he died.
Supposedly got vaporized. But,
yeah, you're led to believe that.
But does anybody die when they're that strong in the Force?
Well, that's the thing.
You know, what I'm kind of more curious about... I mean, I'm sure it's going to be an awesome installment. But if you look at what J.J. Abrams has done... historically,
right?
He's a master of the cliffhanger,
right? There's
no way, you know. Maybe it's probably going to be just a 2 or 2.5 hour. Maybe he'll go Peter Jackson on it and go 3 hours. It's just going to be awesome the whole time, and you're not going to realize it. But there's some way that he's going to cleverly weave, you know, some kind of storyline into it, and you're going to get to the end of that.
Uh-huh.
2.5 hours, and it's just gonna hit you like a ton of bricks. That whatever it is that happens, you know it's gonna be another 2 to 3 years before you get to the next chapter of that story.
So exciting!
So just kind of enjoy it while you can,
yeah,
and try not to think about that. And maybe there'll be another couple Marvel movies in between that'll.
Right, and we'll have the spinoffs in between too. So,
what other spinoffs?
There's been 3 announced, but they haven't really. I don't believe that they've officially announced what they're about or anything. But some of the rumors are, you know, like you said, Boba Fett,
mm-hmm.
and then a lot of people would like to see a Kenobi trilogy, even with Ewan McGregor
mm-hmm.
playing the title role. That would be pretty awesome. I forget what some of the other rumors were, but.
They should do one on just kind of the Jedi way, you know, kind of like the forming of
like
the council.
Have you ever heard of like Knights of the Old Republic?
Yeah.
Yeah, like go way back.
I had that game.
Oh, yeah?
On when it first came out, I think it was just on, I don't know what it was on, GameCube or... No, I had it on the PC.
Oh, okay.
The Knights of the Old Republic. And it's like been one of the highest rated Star Wars games. And if you haven't played it, it totally got me by surprise because there's a huge cliffhanger at the end of it. Spoiler alert, you're playing the main character, obviously, the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And the zinger at the end of it is that you used to be one of the... dark side Sith apprentices.
Oh, wow.
And something happened. You got hurt in a battle, probably by the Jedi's, got amnesia, and it was like the most controversial thing the Jedi's have ever done is they took you and basically brainwashed you and reprogrammed you as a Jedi Knight.
Wow, that's interesting.
So
I never knew that.
You don't learn that until the very final battle. And the game was cool because every decision you make, you kind of have a light side and a dark side meter.
Yeah.
And literally every decision you make tilts you in one way or the other.
Oh, wow.
And it's realistic, too, because it's 10 times harder to stay on the light side.
Oh.
Just
like
decision,
in real life,
just
right?
Like in real life. you can kind of... rob a guy and take his credits, and then if you need the money, you need the money. But It takes a long time to make up for that.
You're so evil, man.
On the light side. And the powers you get were way cooler on the dark side.
Hmm.
But they're more evil, too.
Okay, so, moving along. The current TV series that's on right now, Star Wars Rebels, have you gotten a chance to see any of it?
I think I've seen, like, one episode with Nicholas.
The premiere episode, maybe?
Yeah.
Spark of Rebellion. What'd you think of the characters and the overall feel of the show?
It's pretty cool. I mean, we didn't obviously have anything like that when we were growing up.
Yeah.
So we got robbed. Is that supposed to be kind of a break? What's the timelining of this series now?
Rebels is between episodes 3 and 4.
Okay.
And I think it's like 6 years before episode 4, if I'm not mistaken.
Because you'd think they'd want to do something to bridge maybe...
Between 6 and 7.
Yeah.
Who knows what they got coming. But I know Star Wars Rebels has been really popular so far, especially with people in your age group, because it feels so much more like the original trilogy, whereas Clone Wars felt more like the prequel trilogy.
Yeah. It's such a enduring franchise, though. I mean, even Nicholas is into it. He likes to talk like Darth Vader and... You know, he's 5 years old. And when did the first one come out? Like 77 or something?
Yeah.
On a kind of separate note, I saw one other thing on the internet that they're really trying to focus on intentionally not using CGI.
Right.
And I don't remember what that art form is called where they use kind of the...
Where they just use the models.
Models and puppeteering and you know, and stuff like that. And
practical.
It'll make a movie that much better, you know, because remember when they kind of redid?
Oh, yeah.
Was that the 25th anniversary? I don't know what it was.
Oh, you mean the special editions and all that?
Yeah, and they added all kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
It kind of took away from the feel of the originals, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a good mix of both, but it'll have a feel that it'll be a lot more like the practical effects. And I think people are going to love that. Mm-hmm. JJ is... going to do a great job, I'm sure.
Yep. So I have a question for you.
Uh-oh.
Who shot first?
Oh, definitely Han.
Oh.
Why?
Right. I was thinking the same thing. It's kill or be killed. And when you're in the cantina with a lot of unsavory characters.
Oh, yeah.
You got to set the example.
Definitely.
Let them know not to mess with you.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. 100%. Any other thoughts on Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Long live the Doctor.
Woo! So thank you, Joa. Thank you, Nicholas, for joining the show.
Our pleasure.
Until next time, this is Kate. And until I see you again, allons-y, and may the Force be with you.
Do you know who is Doctor Who?
Okay, Nicholas, do you want to tell us who your favorite Star Wars character is?
Darth Vader.
All right. Awesome. Give me 5.
We just have to keep our eyes open now for uniform or costumes for the Comic-Con.
I know. Are we going to do the Luke and Leia thing where you're Leia and I'm Luke?
We might.
I think we should. Cats. Cats are good. Cats are all over the internet, aren't they?
Major editing.
I know. This is going to be in the blooper reel for sure.
Yeah, let's see the detail. Who ours?
Okay, and that brings us to the end of the 19th Who Wars. I hope listening to it hasn't been as torturous on your ears as it has been for my throat. I do apologize. I wish this cold would just take a long walk off a short pier, as they used to say back in the 50s or 60s, before they were allowed to tell people to just, you know, off or something. Anyway, I digress. If you've enjoyed the show, why not pot it forward, tell a friend about it, promote us on your Twitter account or your Facebook. You know, the more people we can reach, the more people we can, you know, be chatting to via social media. And, you know, it's just a good feeling to know that we're reaching more and more fans each week. I do see statistics, but I love to put faces to names, and even just knowing names is nice too. So if you're out there and you can pot it forward for us, that would be awesome. A great way to do it is also to rate us and review us on iTunes. It can be just as simple as, you know, a one sentence review and click on a star rating for us. I won't ask for a 5-star review, although it would be great if you did give us a 5-star review. All of that stuff helps other fans like yourselves find us. That would be greatly appreciated. All right, now just a reminder that our next episode is on the 28th of December, so you've got a couple of weeks to have listened to this episode, digested things, maybe sent us in an email or an MP3 or something along those lines. And hey, in that 28th of December episode, we'll be talking about the Doctor Who Christmas episode. It's all rushing up so quick, so exciting. Anyway, until next time, I remain Rob Irwin. You guys take care of yourselves out there, and I'll see you next time.
Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Who Wars. If you'd like to be in touch with the show, simply email hello@whowars.net. Find us on Twitter @WhoWars, or if Facebook's more your thing, facebook.com/WhoWars. Oh, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. See you next time.